Accession number 32394, Mr. Don Farrington, Reel 3. Now, we're talking about your time at the radio school at Yatesbury. Any other wireless or Morse training there that you can remember, or was that it for the actual wireless side of it?
I think that was more or less.
And what were your living conditions like then? I mean, what were you in barracks or huts or what?
This is at Yatesbury, you mean? Yatesbury, it was huts.
Yeah. What were the huts? Can you describe what the huts were like? Because these huts are quite famous, but they don't exist anymore. So.
Well, there used to be some left over when the war was finished that used to people go and live in. The the curved sort of building and a long building.
So what do you remember of your hut? How was it all arranged?
Oh, it's fine. Some were like I've just said, with the like metal. I don't know what you call it actually. Building, but the others were the timber.
But how was it laid out? How many were you in there? How was the
well?
Bed
there were so many to a certain area, and all more or less fairly close to one another. And I can't remember actually how many there were in the particular hut. I can't remember.
Did you have a locker?
Yes, you had. Yes, you did. Yes, yeah.
Now, were you having room and kit inspections then?
I think we must have been, because they were always very and making sure your bed was made up correctly and coming around to inspect.
So how would you prepare for a kit inspection then? Or a room inspection?
Well, as it came established exactly how you had to do it, there's no problem with it. You just did it and didn't think anything about it. I didn't find it any difficult. I don't see why anybody else should do, really.
What about things like bullying your boots? Do you remember how you did that?
About
bullying your boots, things like that. Do you remember how you did it?
Bull? Oh, you mean the just getting it nice and shiny, you mean? I don't know, I just did it normally. I don't think I did anything extra special by putting things on it. Anything like that, I just polished it up and that was end of story.
But it wasn't the parade gloss like the army?
Oh no, I wouldn't think it would be anything like as disciplined as that. I think it was just that they wanted it to look clean and make sure that everything about you was the same. I mean, there's talk about discipline, but there's discipline and discipline. You can go over the top with it, which I think probably they do in probably the army, but with the Air Force it's like the uniform. A lot of people said, you know, don't they expect you to do so and so? I said, well, you dress according to the day and the time, and so long as you look, you know, smart, they won't pull you up. But I mean, if you don't, if you like everything else and you don't look after yourself or the clothes, then they'll be down on you like a ton of bricks.
Now, what about the food? What was the food like? It's probably the first real RAF food, isn't it?
The food was, let me put it this way, it was passable. I don't think, we went to, just talking about this one place at Yatesbury, very near to it was a place called Calm, and there they made special sausages. And unfortunately, we got sausage every day at one stage or another, which came the laughing stock, that was. Can't we have a change from sausage?
Was there enough food?
Yes, you managed all right.
You didn't go hungry.
As far as I can remember, I don't think really you got a bit, thinking that certain things like the sausage business is over the top, but generally speaking, it was all right.
No,
you got the chance to complain if you wanted to there.
Anything else happening while you're at Yatesbury? You're only there 4 months, so I mean, you know.
Yeah, no, not a great deal really. I think it was basically head down and getting your Morse up to a good speed, which we did. Oh, and then again, I think we had our first flight there.
Ah, that's, I was just going to say now, that, because you have your first flight on the 8th of March.
It was a de Havilland Rapide aircraft, and they're not the best of, but it was a trainee aircraft. And the day I went up, unfortunately, it was a lousy day, it was raining, there was a wind. I thought, oh my. And I'm not joking, I wasn't in more than about, we're up in the air, and I wasn't up there more than about 5 minutes. I was sick as a dog. And I really was ill.
Was he throwing it about at all? Or?
No, it was the wind, because the aircraft, it was only a train. You'd have to see the models of a Diavland Rapide, I think it's called. There's none in there. It was getting tossed about, all, and I was supposed to be trying to do something to the wireless, you know, and I couldn't do anything at all. I thought, well, that's the end of my career as a in flying.
It was an enclosed cockpit, though. It was just aeroplanes being thrown about.
Yes, oh yes, yes it was. And anyway,
did they make you clear it up? Because they do sometimes.
No, no, no. They didn't this time because I was too ill to do clearing up anyway. But I recovered from it.
Did that worry you, though?
Well, it did at first, because I thought, well, if we're all going to be like that, there's no way I'm going flying at all. But it never happened again. I was lucky with the... when I went up for the second flight later on, it was perfect because the weather was good and it kept like that for the remainder of the time. So it was the very sort of physical aspect of it getting thrown about so much that it made me, I really did feel really off colour. But we got through it, and so it never happened again. It wasn't sick again anywhere at all, no matter. Now, see, the other aircraft were heavier.
Were there any other flights, or was it just those couple of flights in the Rapide? I mean, then?
Well, at that time, there were only a couple of flights. I can't remember how many. There were only a few flights we had.
Now, anything else happened at Yatesbury before you left in... Now, when you leave, you get a missed posting to Cheadle. That was on the 18th of May.
That's another story altogether.
What happened there, then?
Well, I'll put it to you this way. When I got back, when I was leaving there, they were told you will be sent for your next posting, you know, at some time. So we were given leave. So I think that's what it was. And... anyway, they said beforehand, they said, is there any particular place, where do you live, you see? So I said, Stockport. He said, just Cheadle, be anywhere near to you. I said, yeah, it's on the doorstep. Oh, he said, well, we'll arrange for you to be posted there. I never thought anything about it. I didn't know there was another Cheadle. It was Cheadle Staffordshire. He sent to me, when I got there with all my kit, they said, who's you? You're not supposed to be here. This is a top secret establishment. I said, well, it's not my fault. They posted me to Cheadle.
So what happened?
So they realised that, they posted me by mistake. They thought the Cheadle I was asking about, it was Cheadle Stockport, you see. There's a Cheadle in Stockport. So that's where it all went wrong. Anyway, they...
So do you know what the establishment was doing, or did you not find out?
I knew it was top-level stuff regarding, how shall I put it, some kind of intelligence work they were doing. Very hush-hush, apparently. That's why they were quite annoyed that I should get there.
You were only there about a day or so.
Oh, yes. They got me posted, do you believe it? Instead of getting posted somewhere near home, they posted me to Cambridge.
Now, what was that to? It says Marshall's Airport.
That's the one. Now, Marshall's Airport is just outside Cambridge. It is an independent airfield, but was taken over by the Air Force, and they operated Tiger Moths specially for trainee pilots. Now, I was sent there as a wireless operator. They used to have about four wireless operators working on a shift system all the way through the day and night, and you had to do an 8-hour stint.
What equipment did you have? Where was the wireless officer and what equipment was
Well, it was you were in special rooms with the wireless in front of you, and you had gear, and then you had your notepad, and all you had to do was you didn't have to send messages, you just had to receive. You were receiving a whole load of letters, and those letters spelt out a message. And all that they were doing at Yatesbury was studying what I was getting, whether it was as good as it should be. So it was good training again, because every time you filled a page in, you'd turn over and go on to another one, and there'd be messages coming through at certain times. That was during an 8-hour stint.
Now, you didn't know what the code was?
And I wasn't even told anything at all about
it. So all it was to you was, it was just little training. Groups of...
It was groups of letters, which were meaningless to me, but had to be handed in to the people in authority.
So they were real messages?
Well, they were really meant, so yes. They would be interpreted.
But they checked your work?
Oh, yeah. They checked it all, that's
now,
right.
Anything else you were doing at Cambridge?
No, I did a bit of training for the pilots. We did Aldis, getting the pilots to recognise Aldis signals. And I used to sit at the desk and flash the light at certain letters and different things, and they had to write them down what they thought that was. So that was quite interesting. And that was more or less it.
Did you get any flights in the Tiger Moth? Anyone give you a flight?
No, no.
Would you have liked one?
I don't know whether I would or not, actually. I never even thought about it, but I don't think I would, really.
A bit too light.
I like something nice and heavy.
Now, anything happened? I mean, you're there 6 months. You're there till November.
Yeah, that's right.
Anything happened, or was it just a routine?
Well, I was very fortunate there, because I had a relative or a distant relative that lived in Cambridge area, so I was able to go there quite often, either if I was off duty, go during the day or in the evening. So that broke the ice a bit. It was somewhere else to go and somewhere to visit, which did help, because it's a nice area. Cambridge, and we used to go on the River Cam, which was very nice, especially during the summer part.
Did you see much of the students? Or?
Well, I suppose we did, really, but we didn't actually notice. I don't think so. No, I think when you're in the forces, you just stick with your own people.
Now, so after you're there until November, and then you go back to Yatesbury to the radio school.
That's a secondary, yeah, that's
and you're
right.
And you're there till March 1942. Now that's about 4 months you're there. Yeah. Now what were you doing back at Yatesbury?
Redoing what we'd already done before, seeing how your speed was at Morse, and seeing we were getting. More tests on the equipment. Well, because this time the equipment was changing.
Well, there's mention here of a couple of things. So you're doing more Morse, is it? What speed are you getting up to now?
Oh, I don't know whether it's doing more Morse or just doing. I was just keeping up with the normal trend.
You seem to have passed a test for 22 words per minute.
That's right. That would be the aiming point. I think we got over 20 words a minute.
Now, at that level, do you think people start to develop a fist, as they call it, I think? Could you have recognised people sending, or to you, was it always just the Navy people always recognise the sender?
No, I can't say I recognise the sender. No.
So to you, it was just
I just accepted what I could hear, and I could decode it, and it didn't that didn't enter into it, and I certainly couldn't tell you that it was Mr. A or Mr. B who'd sent this message, like some people could.
You also do using something called the Harwell boxes. I don't know what that is at all. What's
well,
that?
The Harwell boxes is like being inside a box, a wooden box, and it's covered, and it's like a flight simulator inside, and it's giving you some instructions onto use of the equipment you've got in there. Like trying to, I suppose it's a little bit like the pilots would do, really, but why we were put in these Harwell boxes, I'm not sure. But so really what you're doing, a little bit of doing a sort of exercise on what the pilots would do to level off an aircraft when it's going into land. It could be that.
Were you just in the machine, or were you actually?
Oh, practicing? No, it's just in a box. It's a radio thing.
Yeah, where, it's just where the wireless.
That's it.
Was it realistic, do you think, from what you later on found?
Yeah, yes, it was really, but it was something that we didn't do very much of, actually.
Now, the other thing that's mentioned on this is that air ops. I don't know what it means by air ops. I don't think you were on any operations at the time. Do you know what it means? It just says air ops. Now, we don't know what it means by that, but you do get some more flights in Dominoes and Proctors. What do you remember of that?
Those are the training aircraft, like the ones originally. Only the different models of aircraft, that's all. In other words, getting flying experience with your radio set in the aircraft.
Do you remember the Domino or the Proctors at all? Do they stick out in your memory? Or?
Well, I don't think I flew. They had Proctors there, but I never flew in a Proctor. We flew in the Domino. No,
who made the Domino? Is that
it was de Havilland.
Is it another DH?
That's right, yeah.
And what was that like? What was her flight like in it?
All right, yeah. No problem with flying after that first episode.
But what was it like to fly in? Do you know what I mean? Or what did you do?
Well,
while
they're a bit. It's like everything else. They're only a light aircraft, and as I say, they can move around a lot, as you can imagine, when they get a wind and things like that. I think what it was that the question of sickness is that I think once it established.
I don't mean. I'm talking about what you were doing. I mean, you said you weren't sick anymore. So
yeah.
But what I mean is, what were you doing while you were up there? What sort of wireless or radio duties were you doing?
It was just trying to tune in to certain wavelengths that we were given, just to see whether we could get there'd be a radio instructor with you, and say, well, I'd like you to get such and such a frequency. Just tune in and see how clearly you can get it, and that sort of thing. There was no transmitting at that stage, but that came later on.
Hey, you passed as an aircraftman first class wireless operator at this time. Do you remember that?
Oh, no, that was when we first went in. Isn't it?
Right, yeah, that's a bit of misunderstanding. So that's where you were promoted?
Yes. Well, we entered as AC2s, you see, wasn't it? That's
what I did,
So that was my first promotion.
Was there a test you had to do before it, or was it just something that came?
No, it's something with experience, yeah. They took the level of experience that you've got, and they reached a certain place in your training that you would pass, providing everything, all your reports were okay.
Did it make a difference?
Well, you had a slight increase in pay.
So mainly a pay thing.
That's right, yeah. You didn't have any badge to show for it at all.
Now, you were there. Anything else about your second stay at Yatesbury?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. You're there till March, and then you go to number one signal school at Madeley.
Oh, no, that was...
Or is it Madeley? I don't know where that is.
It's in...
I can look it up. I'll look it up. It's all right. I'll spell it out.
I can't just remember. I'm not sure now. But I can't remember now. What was your last question?
I was asking what you did at Madley.
It was just a bit more wireless. And and receiving messages again, and just primarily.
So it's continuation training.
A continuation of what we'd had before, because why we were sent there primarily was while we were waiting for a posting to the gunnery school. And my next stage was to get past the wireless operator test, so, and I was a fully fledged wireless operator. So the next stage was to get the second part of my training, which was for a gunner. So we had to be transferred to a gunnery school, and they sent us to Madeley as a stopgap just for a week or two until they got the official posting coming through, because there were quite a few of us there waiting for posting.
Right, now the next posting in April 42 is to Jervey, and that's on the Isle of Man, to the 5th Air Observer School. Now that's where you did your gunnery course.
Yes, that's
you,
right.
You're there well, till looks like May. Till June. What happens when you get there? Because this is quite an important course for you, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, we were allocated our particular. I forget what they call them. There's a name for these curved sort of huts that they had.
Nissen huts.
That's right. That's it. That's the word. They were all these Nissen huts, and we were so many to each Nissen hut. Because don't forget, we weren't non-commissioned officers or anything. We were just AC1s at the time. So we were put with the ones that were not completed the training, and this is where we had a lot of fun. When I say fun, we had a lot of other things, but they had in addition to the continuation then of the wireless side, that's the sending and receiving of messages and flying as well. They had an awful a parade every morning, about 7 o'clock every morning.
Now, what was awful about this? Why does that stick in your mind?
Well, first and foremost, at the time we had a squadron leader who was the officer. He was the officer in charge of the whole. The whole thing, the whole airfield, and he had this wonderful scheme. It was at a time when we were expecting England to be invaded, and we kept getting warnings through that they were likely to do to invade any time. I can't remember the actual date now.
Well, you were there from April 42 to June 42.
Yeah, well. It was shortly after that we got this official coming through, very hush-hush it was at the time, that that they were going to have the invasion of England, and the squadron leader in charge of the airfield had suddenly decided in his wisdom that on the parades that we go on in the mornings, we will be issued with a pike, P-I-K-E. Now, the pikes were very interesting. It was about, I would say, about 4 foot in height. And we had to carry these pikes out to the parade ground on your shoulders instead of a rifle. And we used to stand there and I've got all through the ceremony of raising the flag and saluting the flag and carrying the thing on your shoulder. Now, we couldn't believe what we were doing, actually, because everybody was the same. Oh, talk, this is suddenly his crackpot idea of getting ready for the invasion. And what you were going to do, and what everybody was told to do, in the case of an invasion, you immediately go out to the airfield and you plant that pike in the airfield so nobody can land. Otherwise, you'll get stuck up the backside. And we've got it all recorded in somebody else's story. And it's unbelievable, really, because first of all, it was all kinds of weather we're going, because you had to go on parade, whatever it was like, and stood there for literally quite a long time with this slung on your shoulder, and then knowing full well that that's what it was for. And of course, we never got any invasion, did we? So
you knew it was nonsense.
But I'm afraid it caused quite a problem, because when there was one or two blokes put rude messages on one of the walls of these things about this cracked idea, and he wasn't very pleased with all this, and he got very upset with it. So he changed his mind eventually and decided against it, but while it was on, it wasn't very it wasn't a very welcome sort of thing to introduce.
Now, you still didn't have any training with rifles then?
No.
Now, you start your gunnery training here. You're doing continuation wireless training.
But yeah, that's
tell
right.
me about you. How do they start you on gunnery? That's with machine gun. Is it Browning's or
it's
whatever?
It's a Browning gun, which we carry with in all the aircraft.
So how do they start you on the Browning?
Well, first of all, they put it on the table when it's in its completely, in all its sections in order. Then the instructor comes around and he starts taking the thing to bits. And as he puts each bit separately on the table, he said, "I'm going to tell you now which order to put them back in, because otherwise you're not." But part of your test will be to be able to do it without any instruction, but to be able to put it back again. So you were given a certain amount of time, I mean, not just a day, of a few days, or maybe a week or two, for you to try to get this business of getting it so that you don't have to think about it, just get hold of one and put it. And in the end, that's your first test over. And then you go on to a second test. You go flying with these guns, and they've got, I can't remember, it's the type of bullet in them that are non-explosive, but what they do, they register a colour, and your idea is you follow a lysander with its big what do they call them, at the back of it, floating like a big white circular thing, and you're aiming at this and according to how many hits you get, it goes on your record that your aiming is either A, terrible, B, not so bad, and C, excellent. And that's how they assess your ability to be able to fire. And that was quite interesting, because they took you up quite a few different times.
Now, what aircraft would you be firing from? It's got Blenheims, Ansons and Hamptons.
I think it would be mainly, at that time, it would be mainly Blenheims, more than likely.
From the rear gun position, or?
No, well, there's a mid-upper gun. Oh. It's a mid-upper gun, which is centralised in the aircraft. I think that's why we did it from that aircraft.
And how are you?
I don't know this any other.
Doesn't matter exactly. I mean, were you good, bad, or indifferent?
I would say average. Yeah, I was definitely average.